So we are at number 3. Welcome to the Only Music Podcast. I'm Staffan. I'm here with
Luis.
And today we are going to divide the podcast into 3 sections, as always: news, then what we've been listening to, and then we are going to discuss remixes, sort of in defense of remixes.
Absolutely.
Okay, so Louise.
Yeah.
We gotta start somewhere, and if we don't cover the One Direction losing one of its members.
On the One Direction Facebook page, there's a thing about how Zayn is leaving the band.
I wish I was dead.
They'll always leave a spot for him when he wants to come home.
Yeah! I love you, Zayn. I love you.
That was the big thing. That was the big news. But undoubtedly, what do you expect? You got a boy band put together by professionals. What do you expect?
I was mostly surprised that they are working on their 5th album.
Exactly.
I mean, Spice Girls were, I think, when Jerry left, they were at number 2.
That's right. Yeah.
They know, labels have learned that you got to cram out the most of it.
Absolutely.
As fast as possible.
As quick as possible.
But obviously, we got to talk about the second coming, which is Tidal.
Tidal.
I just thought about like how crazy this is, how this is like the beginning of the new world.
This is historic.
Changed the course of history forever today.
The final frontier.
Yes.
It's the last stand.
Last
town hall for creativity.
Yes.
With the most powerful. Right. Inspired.
Very inspiring.
Every great movement started with a group of people being able to get together and really just make a stand.
So please, Louise.
Where should we start? Let's start by JC announcing a couple of weeks ago he's bought Wimp and Tidal. That was the announcement. You gather the most famous artist of this kind of century, I was going to say, but this decade, in one room to make a PR release about this revolutionary new digital platform.
Exactly.
And you kind of go, great, what is it going
to
be?
Yeah.
And
power to the artist.
That was the one thing.
Yeah.
The first thing is power to the artist without actually telling us what the artist is going to get.
Exactly.
That's a very interesting press release. Number 2 is this is like the technology that no one else carries. And what exactly is it that no one else carries that this carries that you kind of get? And then you think, hang on a second, where are all the artists which really needs the money? Where are they?
It's, we're going to change the world.
Yeah.
There are features coming.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff is coming.
Yeah.
We got a platform.
Yeah.
But in the coming months, you'll understand what we got. But right now, we got hi-fi quality music and a bunch of famous people.
Hi-fi quality music for double the price that any other digital platform has.
Okay.
Which, within 12 hours... after a disastrous PR release, gets lowered to half the price because they realized they made big, huge mistakes.
So basically, all the news outlets have been very harsh on Tidal. The one thing is there's nothing there. There's nothing new about it. There's no creativity. There's no like we can...
It looks like Spotify, basically. That's what you're saying.
Yeah. All the time. Yeah. I've grown up with the idea of artists always hated their label. Always hated major labels. They were always fighting with their creativity against their label.
Yeah.
And finally, with Tidal,
they
are taking responsibility. They are taking, okay, we are going to do something about this.
Mm.
We are not dependent of labels. We are doing something. And... pooh, just empty, just nothing.
Yeah, exactly. And then as a full-blooded Swede, as we are, we have this kind of sense of, well, I coming back to this over and over again, because I look at the video and I see JC, Beyonce, I see Madonna, I see Chris Martin hanging, having a great time. I see Daft Punk, I see blah, 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 everyone's there. However, I don't see anyone representing the indie culture. Coming from an indie background, I feel completely underexposed here.
Well, that would be Arcade Fire. Arcade Fire represents
with
the
one
indie
person.
Culture. Yeah.
Indie person. That's interesting because Arcade Fire not being an indie band any longer, maybe there was at the beginning, but certainly not any longer, they don't, for my liking, don't represent any indie activity at all. And let's face it, who needs the money? Who represent the one who needs to get the Spotify money, etc.? Spotify made a big point of saying, listen, we got an issue here. We pay a big amount of our royalties goes back to the artist. Where does the money end up? It ends up with the major acts. Now, who doesn't get the money are the indie acts that can't survive making this. So really what we need today is not a new title owned by the major elite artists. We need a digital platform that really makes sure that the money goes to the artist, owned probably by the indie artist.
Yeah.
But then, you know, a fair comment that you made earlier that should be put into this kind of conversation is the fact where you go, well, maybe Jay-Z did this as a part of his Roc Nation commitment to his record label. Like, Spotify is owned by major record labels. Let's not forget, not 100% sure, but they certain, like, they don't own 100% of Spotify, but they own a big share of Spotify. In order for Daniel, who is the owner and the creator of Spotify, to get the licenses he needed in order to continue in the catalog and the music, he needed to give away his ownership of that to the major labels. Now, Roc Nation now becomes obviously the label who are part owner of, I would assume, of Tidal. So he is obviously trying to secure something for his artists, which I think is a fair point.
Yeah,
an indie label, you would love to do the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know? So artists on Roc Nation are getting the money directly from Tidal, and they don't have to deal with the deal and agreements they have with Spotify.
Exactly.
So for Jay-Z and the artists on Roc Nation, it should work.
Yeah.
There's a very interesting article about this from Fact Magazine. You should check out.
I guess what you wanted in terms of what I would have seen, what I would have loved to seen, because it's easy to sit and criticize and not be constructive about this. I would have loved to see a deal that would have included all the acts out there. I would have loved to see a statement where they completely transparent with what they're paying the artists, because over and over these digital deals are being made by various member societies, etc., and no one finds out exactly what they're getting paid, because the deals they make are very difficult, very kind of introvert, you know, in lack of better words. And I would have loved just to see a great calculation of this is what the artists are getting paid.
I want just one reason, or maybe five reasons, to switch to Tidal and make my friends switch to Tidal. I've tried Tidal now for 24 hours. I mean, the problem with Spotify is the user interface. It's sort of messy and sort of difficult to navigate and
find the right tracks.
Yeah, exactly. And it's very difficult to define what's offline, what is local, and what is online. Stuff like that. But Tidal is essentially a straight up copy of Spotify.
Yeah.
Maybe because they want the
familiarity here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I saw the Noel Gallagher solo album, and there was a written article about the album. There was the interview with Noel, really interesting piece. And there was the option to read the piece and at the same time listen to the album, which is a really nice idea. Like, if I'm on a tram, if I'm on the subway, whatever.
Great. Yeah,
exactly. Really good quality content and listening to the album. Unfortunately, it didn't work. But that's a bug.
Story.
That's a technical issue. But that's the one thing. I mean, when they are promoting stuff like Daft Punk's, what's it called, the movie? Electroma?
Yeah.
Which is, unwatchable. I've watched that movie twice. It contains great music, absolutely stunning music. I think
lot of people finds it unwatchable. Yeah.
Yeah, it is unwatchable. Yeah. It isn't an art piece, because... Okay, I'm not gonna go into this.
Which doesn't include all the music I want to listen to anyhow, when I can listen to it on YouTube.
Yeah, exactly.
And I kind of rest my case
That's
with all of that.
That's the one thing I'm really looking forward to. YouTube's music
subscription service.
Yeah, because they got...
Yeah.
Just, if you remember when the iPod was released, this was like the early 2000s. It was an iPod. It was the first MP3 player which could hold like 50,000 MP3s.
Yeah.
So at the time, everyone knew that you couldn't get 50,000 MP3s legal.
Yeah.
It was marketed because of Napster, because people could download music for free, and that was the situation. And Apple used that to their advantage. I want to see something...
I'm sure.
Like that.
Watch that space.
I'm not saying it has to be illegal. I'm saying that just be creative and see what people want, what people use. And YouTube is a great example where, yes, there's actually some freedom what people can add to YouTube. You can't just add anything to Spotify. But with YouTube, you can add copyright holders. Don't really care. It's old stuff. It's difficult to tell who owns the copyright.
Absolutely.
And it's fantastic what you can find on there. So if that's going to be a streaming service, which I can, you know, skip the video format and just listen to, that would be perfect. And whatever title is, it's always nice to see some competition. Okay, let's move on. We got to cover what we've been listening to this week. I got to start. So I found a duo. They are called Seth Abbott and Jessica Lee Mayfield. When you hear about this, you're thinking, oh my God, I don't want to listen to this. But they made an album covering Elliot Smith. And when you hear Elliot Smith covers or Elliot Smith tribute band or Elliot Smith, there was a symphonic version of Elliot Smith.
I remember
Which was released right prior to his death. I can't remember, but it was horrible.
It was horrible.
Yeah. There are some artists you don't want to touch.
Yeah.
You don't want to do a Nirvana cover. You don't want to just leave it alone.
Yep.
So I was very hesitant, but I listened to a track of theirs, and they made a very interesting take on Elliot Smith. They got a country flavor to it. Elliot Smith, he's very harsh and he's very bleak. This is more like a smooth and with a very luscious vocals from Jessica.
Wow.
And with that country flavor, it adds a very interesting take on the very, very bleak lyrics, Elliot Smith lyrics and Elliot Smith persona. And I found it just very, very beautiful.
The light bright's now black and white, 'cause you took apart a picture that wasn't right. Pitch burning on a shining sheet, the only maker that you'd want to meet. The dying man in a living room, his shadow paces the floor. He'll take you out in the open door. This is not my life, just a fond farewell to a friend. It's not what I'm like, it's just a fond farewell to a friend who couldn't get things right. A fond farewell to a friend. He said, really, I just wanna dance. Good and evil match perfect.
All right, so I got a hit this week with, I mean, this is the best, this track is perfect. Yes, I'm an XX fan. I love the previous album. I love her vocals. I love everything about XX, I really do.
Do you love Jamie XX as a remixer?
I do, him as a remixer. Some of the best remixes I've heard in the last 5 years is definitely be his on it. I love him. I really do. I think perfect song, perfect sampling. He sampled, this track is called Loud Places featuring Romy Medleycroft. He sampled Idris Muhammad's Could Heaven Ever Be Like This, one of the best track ever coming from the kind of 1977. It's kind of, it's jazz funk meets disco jam. And it's as spiritual as a disco ever gets.
Is it like, I haven't heard the track yet, but is it less, because I find the XX, it's so boring. So is it less XX?
It's 100% XX with a perfect sample for the chorus. It's just beautiful. Annie Mac presented this track on the BBC the other day, and she just goes, this is just perfect. Yeah. And I so agree with her. It's just perfect.
Subjective. Okay, let's go.
I go to loud places to search for someone to be quiet. you to higher places you can't reach without.
I gotta say, it's okay. The chorus really works. The sample really works. The rest of it is standard, boring. Oh, no.
Fair enough.
I want to discuss my final entry a bit more lengthy. So go ahead and talk about your next track.
Okay, I was gonna play another track because it's just a brilliant track, but I gotta do this. Selassou is back. Selassou, the Belgium R&B artist signed to Because, she's this small blonde little girl with incredible vocals. She's done an R&B kind of album, soul album, and I think it's beautifully produced, the whole album. I just got it sent to me. It's a beautiful produced album. She released a track called Gotta Make It Last. It's traveling the internet right now, and
I've never heard of her before.
I know a lot of people hasn't, but she is just brilliant. She did a track with Knowles Barkley for them, the last album. They of course she's not English like Adele, you know what I mean? But this is good. She's just as good, I think, this girl. She's got incredible feeling. She writes well. It's a well-produced album. I think it's a brilliant album, basically. And it's called Gotta Make It Last, Selassou.
Go.
You gotta make it last somehow. So do you feel what I want? Feel what I need? How I close my eyes. I think it's tragic how I never get peace of mind. That's why I love the air that seeps through you. It makes me better, so I breathe it too, yeah. And I'll be keeping all my troubles at bay. You got to make it last somehow. You got to keep it going every day. You got to make it last somehow.
Okay, so I want to end up. We have been talking about Soul Wax. I think off the record, every time we've done our podcast, we talked about Soul Wax and our love for Soul Wax. Soul Wax, for those who don't know, is a rock act from the beginning.
Yeah,
from
indie
Belgium.
Rock, you can say, yeah.
Yeah, from Belgium. Yeah. And they are two brothers, essentially. Mm-hmm. They put out, their first record was produced by Chris Goss, which I love. It flopped, and then they recorded a second album, which was again a more rock album. It sounded like a hit single to many DJs. It sounded a lot like a single, but didn't really work.
Mm-hmm.
I think when they started entering the electronica scene,
that's really another name, basically. They used the other name, Soul Wax, and too many DJs, so
two
different
names. Yeah, it's very confusing.
Names.
So, they switched their name from Soul Wax as a rock act to too many DJs as an electronic act. And they started doing mashups.
Yeah.
And they started doing mashups perfectly timed in the 2004 type era when Danger Mouse did his thing, mashing up Beatles and JC. Then they started to get recognized, and then they released their third album, and they did an electronica version of that album, which is called Night Version, if I recall.
Exactly.
It was really interesting. They also released a video for their single E-Talking.
Yeah.
Which I remember clearly because it's a great video. Mm. It's two guys enter a club in London and they basically sum up each and every drug available at the time, like DMX, ketamine, cocaine.
Yeah.
They even mentioned like whiskey.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing that video and just trying to figure out some of the some of the nicknames for the drugs.
Yeah.
It was very difficult to interpret what that was, but it was still very interesting. And then I remember I think the same year I started working more professionally with music, and I went over to London and I was introduced to labels and I was talking to the artists I've always respected. And I remember the first night I went to Fabric. Fabric is like the biggest club in London, I would say.
Yeah.
Like to me,
yeah, it Ministry was. Of Sound, Fabric, you know, big house kind of electronic.
I so distinctly remember entering Fabric and I was probably taking something, but I was fairly straight. I was fairly decent. I hope my mom doesn't listen to this, but I was fairly, in control. So I remember entering this place and just looking around, and it was the exact same video, the Soul Wax videos played in front of me.
Yeah.
Everyone was on drugs.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone.
Yeah.
And it was guards everywhere.
Yeah.
And the guards didn't care.
Yeah.
There were people coming up to me, like, asking for drugs.
Yeah.
I still remember the bathroom, and there was just one guy, obviously on PCP or, like, taking way too much amphetamine and just dancing on his own and just freaked out. And no one cared.
No.
That was the one thing.
Yeah.
No one cared.
Because everyone are the same. It's no different.
Exactly. You know? And it was perfect. It was really nice. It was, just took me 20 minutes to just settle in and was like, okay, it's super fine. And no one of my English friends, they were like, yeah, this is Fabric.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't mind it. And I just went on the dance floor, and I think when I hear Soul Wax and the song E-Talking, and especially the E-Talking, the night version of this song, I love this song because it has a very distinctive house groove.
Yeah.
And then it switches to this very angst-ridden, like angst frequency with a girl saying, "It's not you." It's the E-Talking,
but it's
which so, is so so disturbing so because if you're having the time of your life and suddenly the house beat drops,
it's not you, it's the E-Talking,
and you're like, wait, I'm suddenly questioning my high. Is there something wrong? Which is the worst thing if you're ever taking drugs. That is the worst.
You don't want to get there.
You don't want to start thinking about. Maybe something's wrong.
Yeah.
And I love that fact when it's not you, it's E-Talking.
Yeah.
And then the song ends with part of the weekend never dies.
Yeah, exactly. Which was very much at the time, you know, the whole weekender kind of English thing. You know, you exit the kind of working week on Friday. You're on drugs for the rest of the week, and on Sunday night, somewhere, it continues into Monday morning, you got to go to work, you know? And it was, like, really, that was the club scene. That's
Did you live in London in 2007?
Yeah, absolutely.
So this drug culture I'm talking about here, I mean,
I think they summarized it with that track so brilliantly, the whole scene. There was also pre that, I think it was, I hope I'm not saying the thing, there was a video called The Weekender, a single in the video called The Weekender. I wish I could remember it because I got a terrible memory, but it's like in the London English club scene, everyone knew about this week. It was like all about a guy gets off work, lies in his bath, lights a spliff, he lies there, starts getting high, and it's all about the kind of weekend trip he goes on.
Yeah.
And it was like, everyone knew this. This was what they did. This is how they lived, you know? Yeah.
Does this exist?
It still exists, absolutely. I'd say, you know, the other weekend I came back from London, and for some weird reason I ended up in this in a kind of so-called private club somewhere in East London, no names, I don't want to hang it out, but you know, you kind of go in there at 11 o'clock in the morning, someone is snorting coke, you know, and it's like, you could just go, this is just London. You know,
when we London. Are, when we are at the bottle of the barrel, when we are at the, we got like five listeners, we got no job, then we're gonna pull out Louise's story, drug stories.
No.
force her to do them to just to get more attention.
No, but you know what? Let's go back to, because I think Soul Wax, too many DJs, and the whole kind of scene of Dur, Bugged Out, all these clubs, etc. at the time, you know, it really summarizes their era of music. There was so much coming out of it and so great. And I just think these two guys are, they're just some of the best in the
country. We just need something new. I've heard rumors, I've talked to other guys this week. They said that they were working on a soundtrack, there is an album on the way.
Absolutely. And, you know, like a couple of, 2 years ago, I tried to book them over here to Sweden for a festival we were doing outside on an island. And I heard that James Murphy and Dave from Too Many DJs were like doing a collaborative effort for a show that summer, which was kind of going back to the 1970s Ibiza style. So like they pitched down all the tracks instead of playing high disco energy, kind of how electronic, techno, whatever, you know, house, they were pitching it down, and there were like tracks, I mean, really slow mode.
That's fantastic.
And it was like the whole setup was so cool. Unfortunately, another festival booked them, and they paid triple what we could ever
pay. Have you met James Murphy?
Yeah, many times, absolutely. I tried to sign him.
I gotta mention this. I talked to my brother last week, and he lives in Brooklyn, and he walks with his dog, and he met James Murphy with his dog.
Yeah,
and
he got like French
poop bags from him, and he asked for two, and he kept one just because he was James Murphy's dog's poop bag.
I have to admit, there is a story where I wish, you know, once again, me and names, but first time I met James Murphy was in his flat in New York, and I was just, you know, I loved the Rapture, and I signed Juan McLean, and I wanted to sign all of it, you know, because I just loved everything they did. And he starts talking about disco. He loves disco, James Murphy. He knows everything there is about the South Soul era, etc. And I just kind of, he plays me this vinyl, which is just the best thing I ever heard. I never seen the vinyl, and trust me, I was a vinyl addict at the time, you know? I would go through every store.
So it was like white label vinyl?
No, not at all. It was just a rare 60s, 70s disco track, and it was just so great. I was just in tears. I walk out from this meeting thinking, I gotta find this vinyl somewhere. 2 meters down the street, there is this guy standing on the street selling me the vinyl.
Seriously?
For $10. I was like, I'm in heaven. I still got the vinyl at home. I should bring it in one day and show you.
Yeah, please.
It's brilliant. He's the best. If you ever hear him DJ disco, you want to go. If you ever in any town near you guys in America, whatever, you see James Murphy
coming
to play disco.
Can we in some way arrange so I get to meet James Murphy here in Sweden? That would be lovely. So obviously we got to play the tracks. This always track. Sorry for derailing, but no drugs at least. Okay, so we obviously gotta discuss remixes. We are both very passionate about remixes, and we have two very distinctive relationships with remixes, I would say. So I posted a question on my music site, basically very broad. Do you like remixes or do you hate remixes? We got a comment here from a guy called Unheard78, and he says, very lengthy, I've cut this down, but it's basically, he says, these days remixes are merely an excuse to tack a popular dance or club music producer slash artist name onto a record that wouldn't normally cross over. Sure, Lana Del Rey remixes sold some records and got some people to hear music that might not have checked her out otherwise, but that doesn't mean that EDM fans will make a full over crossover, or vice versa. So he says, not to sound like a cranky old person, but I long for the days when remixes were genuinely innovative and unique, offering reinterpretations or alternative perspectives of music you loved, as opposed to merely grafting someone's vocals onto a generic club track. That's not saying all remixes are that bad, but if you're an artist on a major label, your output in a remix form will likely be rather dull. And I think we got another comment from a guy called Milky Way Master. He says, in my opinion, remixes are just an attempt to get some publicity or hype of a song that is already good and a finished piece. So before we tackle these questions, and I think they are right in some ways, I think Louise, a history lesson is in is in place here.
Yeah, one of my favorite subjects of all time. Coming from working with reggae for many years and working personally, playing, collecting, etc. Remixes, old elder music, let's put it that way, 70s, 80s, 90s. Remixing is basically, you know, it's a little bit, I think very few people don't remember, like you forget where it's coming from. It was basically the start of it came from kind of back in Jamaica, from the kind of ska, rocksteady, reggae and dub, etc., which was a kind of local musicians in Jamaica, like King Tubby, Lee Scratch Perry, which today are big names, of course, you know, but they kind of deconstructed and rebuilt tracks to suit the taste of their audiences. And by that, it was the new, that was kind of what is today's remixes, you know, they created the base of that. And from that, it kind of traveled over to America, where DJs in the clubs did similar with disco songs, basically, loops and tape edits, etc. And to get the floors filled, basically, that was the point. And one of the really famous names in that was Tom Moulton, who basically invented the dance remix as we know it today, basically. He always called himself, I wasn't a DJ, he always said that. He was basically someone who, he was a fixer, you know, he just did the mix, he didn't do a remix. But however, in fact, he invented the remix, you know. From there, it traveled, you know, names like Pettibone, Larry Levan, all of these guys, the Soul South Soul Records, etc., you know, which was remixes for the disco era, basically brought the sound over to then the DJs in the hip hop scene, like Grammas, The Flash, who was cutting and scratching, etc., you know, and then, you know, up to the 80s and the 90s where we are today, you know that equally as well as we do, you know. But that's kind of the history of it.
So this is leading from the late 70s
started
to the beginning of Grandmaster
70s.
Flash, yeah, late 80s.
Early 80s.
Early 80s.
Yeah, and then over, you know, of course, meanwhile, you know, the Chicago house scene, Frankie Knuckles, Masters at Work, you know, Kevin Saunderson, I mean, I can keep throwing names at you guys, which created the techno scene and the house scene, etc. But, you know, Detroit, Chicago, etc., which was incredibly important for the remix scene as well, because it kind of went hand in hand with the creation of the dance scene, basically.
So I remember when I grew up, I listened to a lot of electropop, Pet Shop Boys, Erasure, mm-hmm. stuff like that. And I remember that the remixes sucked. I always hated them, and then I went went to like the grunge era, indie era, rock era, and when I bought a single, and back in the day, you bought a single, it, especially if it was imported, it cost like 79 kroners, which is like $10 a piece for a single just to get the B-sides, and you ended up with a B-side, which was a remix. That was the worst case scenario. You wanted a proper like B-side studio material. You didn't want a remix. But I think for my... I changed my mind, I think, around the late 90s when Uncle, Massive Attack, and that breakbeat trip-hop era came. And I remember my first single I bought just for the remix was Garbage for the James Bond movie. Uncle had done a perfect remix. Breakbeat, super breakbeat. It was so good. And I remember, okay, I gotta check out who is Uncle. And I started to learn about DJ Shadow and sampling. And then I started to track artists specifically for the remixes they did. But I still feel that when I pose a question on the music site and people are very negative, I completely understand where they're coming from.
Well, I think your guy had a really important piece, what he said, you know. I mean, yes, he was a bit of negative, the first geezer there, but at the same time, he was kind of saying, listen, what happened to the good remixes? That's what he's saying. What happened to the fact when they were really reconstructing and doing something interesting? I think he was referring to Jamaica. I think he was referring to Chicago, Detroit, etc.
I don't think so. I think he was referring to the 90s. I think he was referring to like
Shadow and stuff like that.
Like Chemical Brothers or Prodigy or stuff like that, I would assume. But the problem with remixes is if you look at Spotify and you look at Lana Del Rey, and you, I know exactly what you're talking about when you're bashing remixes, is those horrible standard EDM versions of a Lana Del Rey track. If you take your time, I would say, take your time and listen through a lot of remixes, you'll find some very nice hidden gems. Absolutely. And when you find that hidden gem, it's a very special relationship to that artist, because you then start to follow that artist as a remixer as opposed to a regular artist. And then you discover different bands and so on.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. In the same time, I have to defend it a little bit, because there's something to be said. Yes, some of the remixes aren't great, but we have two examples in the last couple, 2 years, for example, of big remixes that took the track to number one on the charts. I'm talking about Summertime Sadness. I hate to say it, maybe not. Yeah, terrible.
Fuck, that's bad.
I know you hate that remix, but you can't. Listen, it worked. That's just the point. Tiesto, right? You know, we
talked
about John
Legend. Yeah, I know.
Took the track to number one. Yes, I don't like them particularly. It's not my point of remix.
For me, that's...
But it works. Someone is listening to this.
Yeah, but that's a labeled perspective, I would say. Not to sound harsh, but that's a labeled perspective.
Okay, if you ask about me personally, what is my favorite remix in the last couple of years, that certainly wouldn't go on the top 10. You know what I mean? It certainly wouldn't make. So yeah, that's from a labeled perspective. But I also got to think broad audience. I can't sit and think what individually we think, because we are a bit of a snob, you know? If I think, and listen, I spent half my life listening to soul music and disco and reggae and, you know, the roots of music, I think, you know. And then, of course, I'm going to have like, oh, no, that's not good enough. But from a major perspective, I keep thinking, Well, obviously, there's got to be something in this music that people really like. Because otherwise, that Summer Sadness original track would never have made the
charts. That's true. That's true. That's very true. That's true.
Yeah.
And hopefully, because I like Lana Del Rey, maybe she has gotten a few fans because of that.
She uses also, don't forget, she uses Gesafferstein as remixes. She uses, what's the name of the new harsh one that just released before Christmas, I think, or just after?
No, but she's using like Rack, yeah, R.I.C. That's very good.
Exactly.
That's very
she's
nice.
She's got a good
There are some, again, hidden gems.
Yeah.
You got to listen through 20 bullshit stuff and then find your stuff.
Yeah.
So, I remember when I heard the Uncle version of Garbage, for example. I don't know if that was particularly that one track that got into, like, yeah, I like remixes. Mm-hmm. But I found out that these artists are actually improving on the single. They are attempting to do a better version, not like an EDM version, not like a dance version.
Yeah.
They are trying to improve the track.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily have a niche or an audience they have to please. They just want to do their thing. And I mean, I'm a small artist, but when I started doing remixes, I got inspiration from artists who I thought heard a song and thought, okay, I like this song, but I think I can do something with it. I can do something that is my own stuff and I can do it better. And that feeling was very interesting to me, that hearing a track and feel like, wait, this is good, but I can actually improve on this. I think every remix work I've heard and I've been attached to or I've been drawn to is the feeling of, this is a good track, but you know, not to be cocky, but feel like the feeling of I can do this better and add my stuff to it.
Yeah.
And to convince some of the people listening and convince the people, especially comments like that, who feel like, yeah, it's just crammed of EDM remixes, I want to pull up three examples. I want to start out with Battle Drawn Boy, which is a UK typical singer-songwriter, folksy. Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
Liverpool and Manchester.
Yeah, exactly. Big in the late 90s.
Yeah.
Anyway, he had a single called The Shining, which is this classic folk indie singer-songwriter. It's very simple, it's harmless, and it's a beautiful track because of its simplicity. It's very, very basic, but it's very beautiful. And when you listen to that track, you're feeling, okay, who in their right mind would do a remix of that track?
Faith pours from your walls, drowning your calls. I've tried to hear, you're not near. Remembering when I saw your face shining my way, pure timing.
And now I want to play Avalanche's version, which adds a very, it's like a summer breeze. It's like that warm, fuzzy feeling of vintage vinyl with the cracks and those perfect samples, because you know that when you get a remix like that, they won't bother with copyright infringement and stuff like that. But I like how that this remix transforms the lyrics to mean something new because of that warmth and that, again, fuzzy feeling, that summer breeze, that summer spring feeling. I just love this version. Close your eyes and picture a Somerset, whatever. I'm not a poet. I'll just play the track.
Faith pours from your walls, drowning your calls. I've tried to hear, you're not near. From
then I want to add another artist, which is Caribou, Canadian artist, electronic Caribou, music, yeah. Very popular right
Amazing.
Now. One of his first albums, it isn't his debut album, I think it's his third actually, but he had a single called Melody Day, which is, to my mind, it's slightly overproduced, but it's a mixture of pop, harmonies, a bit of psychedelica. It's a single which works perfectly on its own, and I want to play this track first. Then we got Fortet, and when you're thinking Fortet, if you heard of him before, he's very, very experimental. He's very electronic based right now, somewhat sampley based stuff before, and you're thinking, okay, he's gonna add some electronic feeling to this. He's gonna strip it down. He's gonna do something with it. What he does is he actually re-records the full song with a choir, and it's not necessarily a Fortet remix. It's not like, oh, this is Fortet. This is just creativity on its own. It's just Fortet sending this track to Caribou and saying, look what I did with your track.
Melody Day, what have I done? Oh. Now our hearts are locked up tight again, and when I pray it's all begun, and when you smile it melts away again.
And finally, I want to end up with the most difficult genre to deal with is rock. How do you remix a rock track, a solid rock track? And I got here my example. I was thinking of doing their version of Queen of Stone Age, but this one is actually better. This is a band from UK. It's a rock garage band. They are called Band of Skulls. They've done a track which is very... it's not a negative thing, but it's very basic rock and roll track, a riff, guitar riff, looping throughout the song. Want to play a snippet of that?
Did you buy the hand of Do you feel the need to talk about it? Now you're fighting for your corner, saying that you ought to laugh about it. You should get a little braver, do us all a favor, shout about it. Sweet sour, sweet sour, sweet sour.
And then I want to add on Uncle, obviously one of my favorite remixers. Uncle is throughout the years have changed their lineup, but this is from a guy called Pablo Clements, and he has done adding coolness to a track. It sounds very dumb, but it's just adding a layer of drums, a layer of extra guitars, a layer of just more rock and more drums and more of everything. And I love the feeling of taking a standard rock and roll track and making it cooler. He obviously had the one thing that I talked about before. I feel that he listened to the track and then felt like, okay, I can actually do this better.
Yeah.
right after this remix, Louise's iPhone just died. So sorry, we are going from bad audio equipment to even worse. But we are gonna share this mic and talk about another comment from my blog post. This comes from a user named Young Turk. We can presume it's not the label. But he says, today you can't put out a lousy remixes expecting them to make it on a physical release or to receive the weakest hint of attention from an audience. Today, a remix is intended to be original, valid, contributing to an already valid piece of music by definition. The reviewing process of singles and 12 inches is a lot more critically rigorous than it used to be. Basically, a credible DJ isn't allowed more than a couple of unconvincing remixes before being declared done, end quote. And I just want to start out with, having been a remixer myself, I can say that that isn't true. When you send your remix to the label, often you don't have direct contact with the artist himself or herself. You send it to the label, and there's no way the label is gonna reject that remix, unless you're maybe Tiesto or a very famous DJ, but you don't get rejected. That's why we end up seeing so many remixes on singles like Lana Del Rey, for example. You got 12 different remixes because they are sort of cheap, and you don't, as a label person, sorry Louise, say no to remix. And the artists often don't have much say in this, because you want, as a label, to push out 12 different versions of that song and see what hits. Would you say that's...
I'm not 100% there, but then I can't speak for every record label. I just know how we work and how we define. We do not push out anything. If it's a bad mix, we will stop it. Maybe we'll try the water, we'll test the water, but if we're not getting the response we need, we'd pull it immediately. The artist definitely has a big say in it. They will, I mean, with the artists that I work in a way. However, saying that, there are a lot of artists out there that might don't, you know, Stefan is correct, they probably don't have much to say about it in the end, but... You know, everyone works different, that's a big point, but to yes, there is a lot of unsuited remixes out there. I think the point is, something happened to remixes. Something happened to the scene. All of a sudden, you could sit at home, get the stems or whatever, somehow get a track and do a remix at home. Anyone could do it. And that really changed the climate, because all of a sudden you were receiving, every time you release a track that has a feel of electro to it, I have 50 requests of people who wants to do remixes sent to my email, and I have no idea who they are. And sometimes you sit there and think, maybe this guy is a brilliant remixer, you know, you don't know. And
that's true, but I'm talking about when I've got a remix request is often from, or it's basically only from labels who have heard my previous remixes, mm-hmm. and says, like, mm-hmm. okay, we want something similar to this. Can you provide that?
Yeah.
And you get the stems, and you get a deadline, mm-hmm. and you send it to them at the deadline, and you get... I've never heard... I mean, I've not done that many remixes, but I've never heard from similar artists being rejected. I never heard of a remix being, okay, mm-hmm. we're not going to put this
right,
out.
Right.
Because, I mean, you're basically paid up front.
Mm-hmm.
That's
absolutely
one thing. Mm-hmm. And the label... Okay, they're like, okay, this isn't so good, but we can add it to the CD, or nowadays we can just add it to Spotify, or we can add it to SoundCloud. It's free. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where I'm coming from when I see...
No, I think you've got a fair point, absolutely. There's a lot of that going on as well.
It's just when I see him saying, like, you need to be creative to... And there's a very rigid reviewing process. That is not necessarily true.
I agree. I mean, it's kind of what we said earlier, you know, it became a tool, like anyone can do a remix today. It's not really that difficult, you know. I'm not saying anyone, but, you know, quote unquote anyone, you know, it became very available to sit and to do remixes on tracks. and a lot of people wanted to try it. So yeah, it became a quite saturated market. You know, you watch, for example, Mappé, the Swedish artist, you saw her Don Way track that was a big internet success for month and month. And you kept thinking, when is the album coming? And they kept filling on with remixes, one after the other, you know, and very good remixes as well on top of it, you know. And you kept thinking, eventually the album came after like 10 months. No, I don't really know. Don't quote me. But, you know, it took a long time. But they used remixes as a kind of tool to prolong the actual promotional tools, which is, yes, we do that. Labels do that because the internet is so fast, so quick. So the minute we release the track, we need more tools to keep the promotional marketing happening, you know. So anything we can use, including videos, remixes, etc., is a very important tool for us.
You know? I think back to the why we're talking about this, it's, yeah, that's why it's so difficult to find those remixes which are very good, because there's so much junk out there.
Yeah, I agree.
And you have to sort through. It's not like finding an artist and be like, okay, good, I'm listening to the album. It's sorting through so much BS throughout the remix world.
I agree.
So I want to move on to a very interesting comment made by a guy called Fabulix Fab. He says, and this is, again, cut down, but he says, with the birth of SoundCloud, remixes have gone to a whole new dimension. For a DJ, remixing a track is not anymore a matter of just having your own version of the song to play, but also some kind of a publicity stunt. If the remix gets popular, then you get noticed. And I feel that's a very valid point.
Absolutely.
SoundCloud is the new MySpace. The new platform to actually gain success.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talk in the music industry about if you got the music, if you got the promotional skills, you can make it. That's not necessarily true. I mean, look at Radiohead releases. I mean, there's like, oh, Radiohead are such pioneers for releasing their records with the pay what you want stuff, and they are getting a lot of publicity. That's not gonna happen with an indie artist, and again with torrents and with leaks. Especially, you can't just leak your album and be like, "Yeah, I'm gonna be the next Kanye West," because Kanye West leaked his first album. That's not how it works. But I think SoundCloud, maybe this is over in a year or so, but SoundCloud still works as a very prominent springboard for remix artists.
Absolutely. It's a valid SoundCloud today is part of our marketing plans. See what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a couple of years ago, they certainly weren't.
Yes.
Today, we kind of say, okay, so we open up the SoundCloud once we premiered, once we've done that, then we open up SoundCloud, and then we make sure, then we let it lie there for a couple of, you know, it's all part of the plan, you know? So definitely.
And I think for artists who are doing remixes, I think my best advice would be use the promotional money that is being spent on artists and make your own. So when I did my Radiohead remix back in 2007, I believe. So Radiohead announced that they were going to release their album as You Pay What You Want.
And Rainbow was their album.
So what I did was the album got released a day earlier because they had to cope with the amount of server load and the amount of downloads. So they basically just released it a day earlier. So I remember sitting at home and thinking, okay, I got a possibility. I got a situation here which I can use, because Radiohead is gaining so much attention because of not their music, because how they market this.
Yeah.
So I got the album. I found a track I could remix. I spent the night. I think it was 5 hours or 6 hours. I did it's a horrible remix, but I did it, and I sent it to one of the prominent blogs back in the day. I think I sent it to them, and I sent an email to NME. because everything that has to do with either Radiohead or Oasis, they pick up with. So I said, look, this blog has picked it up, and NME went with it, and from NME and the blog community, it went haywire. It went like crazy. It was such a huge buzz. It was, the headline was, this is the first remix, the Radiohead remix. And no one knew if it was official or unofficial. And it got a lot of comments. A lot of it was hate towards the remix. It wasn't good. Basically, I just stole drums from DJ Shadow. I sampled. I didn't care. It wasn't that good. But it got a lot of attention. And I got my name out there. And I think because of that, I got my opportunities in the label business. I got my major label attractions. After that, I think all of my remix work is because of that lousy remix. I ended up remixing Radiohead for real 3 years later. But I think being creative, being using the promotional tools and see, okay, Sony or Warner or the major labels are pushing this. What can I do to use this? And I think SoundCloud is a great platform to do this.
Yeah, I agree.
So ending up with our conversation about remixes.
Yeah.
I think there are a few points we want to underline here. It's, yes, it takes time to find your remixes, your remix artist, but it's worth the cause. There are so many examples. We had such a big discussion before this meeting of artists we want to bring out and remixes we want to showcase. But it's basically about when you find that remix artist you like, there's a whole new world opening up. And if you're afraid that right now we are in a EDM
country zone
which is never gonna end, and we are never gonna get back to the glory days, quote unquote, of the 90s.
It's done already, don't worry. What the last kind of thing you want to bring out in terms of, I think my feeling and what we feel right now is that the scene, the dance scene, etc., is pumping up techno right now. And I'm not going to say techno is going to go mainstream or whatever, but there is a remix out there right now, which is by a Swedish guy called Jonas Rathman. And he's done a remix of Sam Smith, Like I Can, the track that's gone originally, you know, the original was big, major. And however, the remix is attracting so much attention, and I think it's really giving it. When I first heard it, I thought I was going to hear an EDM remix. That's what I assumed. Instead, I hear this kind of house techno mix, which is really beautiful, and it really gives me like a positive vibe of believing that we are kind of going in a different direction. EDM is kind of out already. No one is aiming for that right now. We're much more aiming at a more interesting scene that's going to come out of this landscape right now, I think.
We are in a good time period right now.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about Def Grips. We don't understand Def Grips, but it's the
massive
amount of buzz and the amount of listeners, and it's very difficult to listen to them, and they are gaining so much success.
Yeah.
That's just one example. There's plenty of other examples of music which isn't commercial in any way, and it's getting so much buzz.
Absolutely.
And I'm not talking about Pitchfork boosting it.
Mm.
We're talking about other sites, blogs, whatever, listeners. So we are, I would say, in a very good period, and I think the remix community is gonna grab hold of that and do something with it.
For sure.
Before we play the remix, I just want to say, or we just want to say, oh my God, you just listened to the third episode. Thank you so much for sticking with us.
Thank you.
And we promise better audio quality next time. We promise we are working on getting better at this. We are essentially just working at making this the only music podcast. please add your review at iTunes. That means a lot to us. Send us an email if you have a question or if you have any comments about this remix discussion or whatever. It's always interesting. We read everything we get. So again, thank you.
Thank you very much.
They'll never love you like I. They'll never love you like I can. They'll never love you like I can.
Love you like I can. He'll never love you like.